Thank you, Mr. Springer. Mr. Diamond.
Yeah, thank you. I thought I'd see two things, and Mark was getting to it. One, so this, that the city does not have the legal authority to be telling any private citizen to wear a mask, and this doesn't do that. It suggests that community members should be wearing a mask when they can't socially distance. So that seems totally reasonable. It's setting up sort of a culture of mask wearing. But it does do one thing. It does mandate something, that masks or similar face coverings be worn in city facilities in accordance with this resolution. And for the most part, I have no issue with that whatsoever. I just got an email, which I forwarded to some of you, from the governor. So all state employees have to, when they can't socially distance. Right? But I can imagine, I can see a place where there would be some exceptions to this. For instance, as the city manager brought up, people work in dispatch, right? Might be a reasonable exception to that. Two guys underneath the new grader, putting on a new oil pan, working together underneath that grader, you can't wear a mask in certain situations like that. You really can't. Something else to consider, and not work effectively. Something else to consider would be, and I don't know where to go with this, I think you'd have to figure it out, is your fire department personnel who are living in a congregate situation with their schedule. It's like a household. It is a household. But it's only a household for a certain number of hours, right, for their shift. It's the same five folks. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't wear a mask in my home. But is there, for the writer of the resolution, is there room, I didn't see it in here, is there room for the city manager or department heads to identify informally certain places where an exception should be made?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, this was not intended to make anyone the mask police. No one is going around. YK has been required to wear masks right. for months now, I think. It feels like it anyways. And no one is going around and checking, you know, when I go sit down at my own desk and only face my computer screen, I pull my mask down. It's about when you're close together, when there's nothing stopping your bodily fluids from coming out of your nose and mouth and spraying onto someone in front of you. I mean, that's what the spirit of this is.
So then I had a question for the city manager, then I'm done. And so does this seem reasonable to you? It's very similar to what all state employees are doing. Do you see places that's problematic in real life?
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Carraza?
So Councilor Diamond, there are already some mask mandates that we have in place, as Councilor Springer mentioned.
Right.
When you're interacting with the public.
Yep.
And I've pretty much relied on department heads to make those choices. For example, the police department, they have policies in place,
yep.
and the fire department as well. So I would defer to their judgment because they're at the facilities. I am not over there at the police station, so I wouldn't see what the protocol is. There might be some where we have employees complaining that their coworker is not wearing the mask because this mandate says that they should be, and they gave them lip, and I would have to sort of discipline the employee that, or investigate and incur disciplinary measures because it is a mandate that, you know, you sit next to your coworker in a certain setting, your department head said that you're supposed to wear a mask and you didn't. So we would have to employ.
And it comes up in the performance review. Okay.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond, Mr. Carraza. Anyone else? Further discussion? I wish we had the health powers to actually make people wear these masks. And if we are mandating a lot of the, if we're asking, strongly suggesting that everybody wear masks within this community. I know that the city of Bethel has had a stockpile of masks. And does YK have a stockpile of masks, or does any organization within Bethel have maybe more masks available in the event that we need more?
I'm not sure about YK. I know YK does have masks, but I think they're primarily, you know, used for handing out at the clinics or handing out when folks walk into the hospital. I'm not sure about if they would be available for, you know, for use by the city, but I know Vinny did express, maybe he could speak to this more, but he did express, you know, when we talked about the COVID-19 budget, the intention to purchase, you know, large quantities of PPE, including masks, to have available for staff and employees, for everybody. Yeah, so I was kind of hoping that would, and that would help with this, for having some available for folks. And then I wasn't sure what the status was on, like, the ones that you guys are wearing right now, on how many are still available. But, you know, a mask is, everyone's got a mask now. No one can say they don't have a mask, because if you're going in AC or Swanson's, I don't know anybody that doesn't go to either of those stores. And even, you know, the gas station, and everyone almost is requiring it. The only place I don't see them at, actually, is the queue. The only place that I'll go in and I'll be the only one wearing a mask, and I will happily be the only one wearing a mask in there. But, you know, anyway, I digress.
Yeah, I know that there are businesses here in town that, for some really odd reason, that don't require masks. I've been in some businesses where I walk in the door, like you said, I'm the only one wearing a mask. I think there's two or three that I've been in the last two weeks. I'm
They're
the only one wearing
the minority,
a mask.
Though.
Yeah.
The majority is requiring them now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the end, it comes down to, City Council's passed countless laws, and people may choose to not follow them, and that happens all the time. Look at it, every single abandoned car in this town is a violation of BMC. So it's a matter of developing a culture of mm-hmm. of what's a reasonable expectation, and we can do it. We've done it at work, and it can be done, I think.
Yeah,
if there's flexibility where there needs to be flexibility, in some cases there needs to be sometimes.
So the three series of posters that are being brought around, you know, be 6 feet apart, wear your mask, wash your hands. Everybody has seen those cartoon posters. I brought three of them on over to the business that we're in dialogue with and dropped them off. So I hope I will see those posters over at that business. Mr. Carranza, would you like to add something? Ms. Franco?
Yeah, thanks. Just replying to the comment regarding masks, I am kind of curious of what our stockpile situation is with the city. And I kind of encourage and hope that we would start to make orders either to the state EOC or just with the CARES funds to make sure that we do have, you know, a decent supply on hand. I don't know, in my personal opinion, I think, you know, seeing how much funding we have received from the CARES Act, I think it would be good if we have a pile available to provide public. You know, this won't be over anytime soon. If schools are to open, if some activities are to resume where people are congregating, we'll definitely need supply of masks. I know hopefully everyone does have one at this time, but, you know, they do get lost, or you need to wash one and you don't have another one, whatnot. I think it would be really important to have a supply. Additionally, I am in support of this. I think it's pretty reasonable. It's very similar to what the state has mandated. I know personally at my place of work, I'm expected to wear a mask unless I'm alone in my office, and I do find it reasonable. You know, it's in the best interest to keep things operational. If one of my coworkers or myself were to get COVID-19 and not to wear masks or social distance, that really could affect our operations. And I hope the city would think similarly. It was really interesting. My friend downstate gave a very long dialogue about the Pizza Hut that her brother worked at and how seriously they took shifts and PPE just so that they could maintain operation were one employee to get infected. You know, I hope that would not be the case, but this is far from over. And I think it would be very important that we take as many steps as possible, at least at our place of work, to maintain operational. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Franco. Let's hear from our city manager, Mr. Carraza, as to what our stockpile is and what's happening.
Sure, Mayor Barr. And to Councilors Franco's comment, or a question, we have over 20 of these reusable, washable masks left. They were donated to us by the group of mask makers, mm-hmm. and we've had this donated since April. And the word has gotten out that if you need a mask, call the EOC, we can give you one. We have just kept to the face coverings or the cloth coverings because the surgical ones, it's hard to find, and plus they're sort of reserved for the hospital type staff, medical staff.
The disposable type, yes.
So we have a stack of those, and also the fire department has it for their personnel as well. Those we try not to give out. We still have the cloth masks left. And to the second point I wanted to bring up is that the council has the, you know, in this resolution almost kind of like a mandate, but I have a lot of CARES Act money that I still am trying to spend. This past weekend, we rolled out the financial incentive program for testers. So on Saturday, we had 55 people took us up on our offer, gave out $25 gift cards. And on Sunday, we had 69. Nice. So as the words are getting out, we're using the carrot versus the stick. Similar here, I could issue you 500 raffle tickets to each council member. And if you go around and see somebody with a mask on, hey, you know, we want to promote this. We could use the carrot approach and incentivize that, and we could have a weekly, you know, drawing of citizens we found wearing masks. That's the other side of how do we encourage people to wear masks. Well, hey, you can win a big screen TV or an Xbox or something that we could do similarly like we did with Clean Up Green Up to try to get people to clean up the community. So we could also do the incentivized portion of it versus, you know, the mandate that we have on the paper. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Carraza. I don't know if you really answered the question. We've made orders to our state EOC and other vendors.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. So every month, last month we did a $10,000 order, and this month we'll do another $10,000 order just on PPEs to keep the stockpile going. We have $200,000 for the stockpile, and, you know, in any event, there might be additional need for masks, we'll have them. And it's real hard to find hand sanitizers, but we do have a lot of demand for hand sanitizers. We're trying to get those, but masks is another big item.
Can I add something to help that?
Yes, sir, yeah, Mr. Diamond.
As a state worker, I mean, long before there was a mandate from the governor, because I work in very high risk situation, congregate living, inmates, people coming from all over. We started making masks, and Alaska Department of Corrections inmates have made 50,000 plus masks. I mean, it was 50,000 masks a month ago. It might be 60 or 70,000 now. Myself and one young lady up there who's an inmate, she made 600 herself, and we made 1,000 a total. And they felt good about that because they're giving back and staying busy and not bored. So because I think from the state EOC, you might be getting surgical masks like this and 95s and stuff. But what we want accessible for our employees, if an employee has one of these, that's great. And if they've been fitted for a 95, that's great. But you can never wear one for very long if it's a 95. Ask a surgeon. But if we need to provide masks for our employees, what we're going to be providing them are cloth masks, is my understanding. And in that case, we might want to reach out to DOC, the Department of Corrections, because we've been handing out, Department of Corrections statewide has been handing them out to municipalities, fire departments, police departments, homeless shelters all over the state. So if we need cloth masks, that might be a route to go. And I could get you that information about who to contact at DOC. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond.
If you're going to mandate something from employees, you need to provide them the goods, you know, even though we know they all have them now.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. The floor, Mr. Springer, is yours.
Thanks, Mr. Springer. Just reflecting back on the last time the city of Bethel mandated protective equipment, bike helmets.
Right. And what did the PD do?
And what the PD did was when they saw kids wearing bike helmets, they gave them their little bubblegum cards and stuff
ice
like
cream,
that. And when they didn't have a helmet
voucher
on, I think they gave them out a helmet.
Yeah.
So there's we have experience incentivizing the use of, and the kids were real proud, man. Like, oh yeah, the cop thought I was cool because I had my helmet on. Or the cop was cool because he gave me a helmet, or, you know. So we definitely want to, especially with the public, we want to keep this in a very positive note. I will say that where it says that the city council establishes a mandate that masks or similar face coverings be worn in city facilities. Yeah, because the city council owns the public city facilities on behalf of the people of Bethel. And so, you know, it's like no shirt, no shoes, no service. We have that authority as the owner, as the custodian of these public facilities, to be doing that. The rest of that, the public, let's just continue to be proud of the fact that just about everybody in Bethel is wearing a mask a whole lot of the time. Folks that aren't, anything that we can do, like I said, I wasn't joking around. I said, the police cars, I have just a grocery bag full of cloth masks. And, you know, you see a gang of kids or adults walking around, they're not wearing masks. Stop. Say, you don't say, where's your mask? You guys got masks? And if they say no, here. You know, they'll go a long way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. I think we've discussed this very much at length, and I think we need to move on. So unless you all have last parting words on this resolution, I'm going to ask for a vote. So all those in favor of resolution 20-10, a resolution by the Bethel City Council establishing a policy within the city of Bethel that masks or similar face coverings be worn in public and indoor adjacent spaces and under certain conditions in the outdoor spaces during the COVID-19 public health emergency. All those in favor of such resolution indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. Thank you, Council. And we're moving on to action memorandum 20-30, which is 10.3, sole source approval for NC Machinery regarding equipment germane to gravel road maintenance, put forth by City Manager Carraza. So there's would like a main motion to approve action memorandum.
I move to approve action memorandum 20-30. Sole source approval for NC Machinery for equipment for road maintenance.
Thank you, sir. And do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Leary. Yes, ma'am. Discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I just got one question for the city manager, since we already suspended the rules. We suspend the rules, especially for city employees, last through the meeting. This one says that there's 19 miles of gravel road, and then on the budget mod to buy the grader, there's a 28 miles. So probably closer to 28 than 19, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Mr. Springer, thank you for that clarification. Further discussion? If not, there's a motion on the floor to approve action memorandum 20-30. All those in favor of such indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. 10.4, action memorandum 20-31, allowing the city manager to negotiate and execute a purchase agreement with DXP, Alaska Pump and Supply Incorporated, for a sewage lagoon pump. That was brought forth by City Manager Carraza, and that passed on the consent agenda. Item 10.5, Action Memorandum 20-32, allowing the city manager to negotiate and execute a 5-year contract with Company A for auditing services. That was again brought forth by Mr. Carrazza, and that passed on the consent agenda. Item 10.6, Action Memorandum 20-33, authorizing and directing the city manager to release a request for proposals for professional services to perform the full range of services related to an employee classification and compensation study for the city of Bethel. That was brought forth by Vice Mayor Hansen. I would entertain a motion to approve Action Memorandum 20-33.
So moved.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Hansen. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. DeWitt. Discussion, Ms. Hansen, as the maker of the motion, you have first debate.
Yeah, so the reason I wanted to do this is because when we had our council priorities special meeting, this is something that came up, I believe, multiple times as something that was a priority within the city. And, you know, we've talked a lot about retention. And this is a way to try and increase that, understand the actual job descriptions that are written, try to match up job descriptions with actual requirements for the jobs, looking at career progressions, and trying to try and better establish what that system of employment looks like here at the city, to make sure people are making, you know, the right amount of money, getting the proper amount of benefits. And so it's going to be looking at each department's positions, how many people are actually needed for each department, and what those responsibilities will be, and having an outside firm, like consulting firm, take a look at this and analyze it and try to prescribe what would be the best move for the city. So actually what this is just doing is looking to put out a RFP for a professional service or consulting company to then place their bid to be the company to do that. So this is just the first step. So yeah, hopefully that made sense if anyone has questions or anything.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Vice Mayor Hansen. Ms. DeWitt, would you like to add anything to that?
No further comments. I fully support this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. DeWitt. Further discussion?
Yeah, one. I see it as an investment in the future, creating a stable workforce, a more stable workforce, both administratively and not so. So I would hope it's a good investment of funds, and I think HR supported it. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. Kind of preferred the dartboard method myself, but okay. Yeah. So all those in favor of the approving Action Memorandum 20-33 indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item 10.7, Action Memorandum 20-34, which is the appointment of Committee Commission Board Member Melanie Fredericks to the Public Safety and Transportation Commission. That was sponsored by myself, and that passed on the consent agenda. Item 10.8, Action Memorandum 20-35, authorizing the city manager to negotiate and execute a purchase agreement with JC Enterprises for a 20-foot boat and trailer for use in sewage lagoon operations. And that was brought forth by City Manager Carrazza. That passed on the consent agenda. Item 10.9, Action Memorandum 20-36, authorize and approve city administration to issue checks totaling $3,396 to year 3, quarter 2 community action grant awardees based on the Community Action Grant Technical Review Board's CAG DRPB work on scoring applications and deciding how much to award each applicant. That was brought forth and sponsored by City Manager Carrazza. And I would entertain a motion to approve Action Memorandum 20-36. Thank you, Ms. Suri.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. Discussion?
I'd like to defer to the mayor to hear about this, or maybe, I don't know. Do you want to talk about that? You already kind of did, but I would be happy to suspend the rules to hear maybe from our CAG ex officio.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that. Then maybe I'll have Mr. Sargent come on up here and ask him to speak on it. So we had only two applicants this go around this last quarter, and I really wish there would be more organizations and more people that would like to assist Bethel in becoming a better, well, Bethel's already a pretty darn cool place to live, but maybe something to beautify Bethel, maybe they recognize a need out there and they'd like to sponsor something that would help a group of people that would, maybe improve the quality of life in a subdivision or a housing area. Please apply for those grants. Again, the application period opens August 1st and it ends on the 31st. And I'm going to ask to suspend the rules to ask Mr. Sargent to come on up here and maybe add a couple things.
Yeah, I'm going to suspend the rules, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Leary. Mr. Sargent. All those in favor of suspending the rules to hear from Mr. Sargent indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. John Sargent, JohnSargent for the record. Mr. Mayor and council members, remember May open season was during COVID-19. So I really think that had a negative impact on our applications. I mean, we've been getting 5 and 6 applications. I just think people had other priorities. That's what I'm thinking. Applying for a CAG grant takes work. I mean, somebody's got to have a project. Someone's got to have energy and enthusiasm and ideas what to do with the money. And so that's why I think we had low scores. But I think the more we get the word out continuously, you know, I've been on the radio and announcing it, this public meeting right here, we get the word out, open application season 4 times a year. Next one is August. I think we'll get more applications. There's no limit to how much you can ask for. We've had the people ask for $460 all the way to $25,000. And we've given out, I think the average is $6,000 or $7,000 per application since we started.
Uh-huh.
So this is year 3. It's going strong. We've always had applications. We've always given out money every quarter. So I consider that a positive thing. And even though we didn't give these applicants the full amount they wanted, we discussed it at length with the applicants present. We asked a lot of questions. We gathered information. And I think this committee really did a good job discerning the right amount to give these applicants to get something off the ground and get a project going.
Yes, sir. Questions for Mrs. Sargent?
Mr. Mayor?
Ms. Franco?
Yeah, thank you. And sorry, John, you might have already answered this, but I was just wondering, there is no correlation between the amount that we awarded and that we have like in the bank account. So like we're not, you know, giving less amounts because pretty much I'm wondering how is the fund doing? Are we still receiving funds from alcohol sales or has that gone downhill drastically? And that's why we, you know, gave such a little amount compared to what was requested.
Yep, I can answer that. The amount to give out, I believe, is over $130,000. We have a lot of money to give out. We didn't get a lot of applications. What happens is the committee just carefully reviews. We do have a list of ineligible items. So they start there and they consider all aspects. You know, is it an entity that's asking? Is that entity supposed to do those services? Maybe that's not really appropriate. And so really, the committee carefully discerns the project and really focuses on the vulnerable populations, the purpose of the money, and tries to to do the best job with the money available, but we have plenty of money available. We need more applications. And we do take 3% of all it's 20% of all alcohol sales taxes. That's the easiest way to figure it. And this is a community vote to increase from 12 to 15% on all alcohol sold. So we are still collecting the money. It rolls over from year to year. It doesn't have to be budgeted. So we have money to give out.
Thank you, Mr. Sargent. Hearing no other questions for Mrs. Sargent, thank you. So there's a main motion to approve action memorandum 20-36. All those in favor of such indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. All those disapproving, say nay. Motion carries unanimously. We're at item 10.10, which is the personal leave request by the city clerk, June 29 to July 10 and July 16th and 17th. And that's this year, right?
Yes.
Okay, not next year.
I didn't have an opportunity before my emergency leave to request my leave.
Yes, ma'am. So that passed on the consent agenda. We appreciate you being back, Ms. Strickler.
Thank you.
And we're moving on to item number 11. We'll start with the mayor's report, which is item 11.1. And I don't have anything. So we'll move on to item 11.2, which is the city manager's report. And with that, I'll defer to Mr. Carrazza.
Thank you, Mayor Barr. So in accordance with ordinance 20-23, this report is a mid-July update of city operations as a supplement to the July monthly report that will be presented to the council in August. So three operation highlights I wanted to talk about. One is the hauled utility Sunday meeting. Number two is non-congregate shelter. And number three is Wednesday's EOC level 3 day. So the hauled utility summit, as mentioned in the city manager report at the July 14th regular city council meeting, hauled utilities is down to 12 of 18 drivers. 9 drivers is the minimum number that were identified through the COVID-19 discussions as the system failure amount. And we're actually hearing today from Council Leary that if one of those drivers get COVID, apparently the whole department has to get quarantined. So 9 apparently is not the number now. It's if one is caught with COVID, we are just in dire straits. So, but on Sunday, July 19th, a hauled utility driver summit or meeting was held in council chambers to solicit feedback from the drivers themselves on how to improve the hauled utility system, particularly recruitment and retention. So the feedback from them were generated into 3 categories of concern. One is that they felt that the starting wage for the drivers need to be $30 an hour. That might be something we provide to the consultant that's doing these surveys. Number two is they're open to the idea of a rotational program similar to what the police department has, like 4 weeks on, 2 weeks off. You live in Anchorage, you come here and you work for 4 weeks and you go back to Anchorage. And number three, they're also interested in like an internship program to recruit future generations of drivers. Go to the high school, they get a $15 an hour job after hours, they sit with the drivers, maybe get out, suck sewer, pump water, to have an idea that, hey, I would like to do this, you know, in 4 years to be a water and sewer driver. So city management will work to see how we can support the hauled utility program. Ultimately, however, having 33% vacancy in a program that heavily depends on labor availability is not sustainable. City management recommends that the city start becoming less dependent on the hauled utility system and move towards a piped system maybe within 30 years. Next up is non-congregate shelter. So last Tuesday, which would be maybe 2 Tuesdays ago, the city council passed the coronavirus aid relief and economic security or CARES Act budget, and we're quickly spread. The Emergency Operations Center is administering the lodging for transit personnel. This is to house villagers who are stuck in Bethel overnight, awaiting their continued flight to the villages. So the EOC does not want travelers coming from Anchorage to commingle with the citizens of Bethel. By controlling their transportation from the airport to a hotel and back, the EOC can, to an extent, separate the two population groups. As of today, we have housed 8 villagers from Nutuk, Imanik, and Mekoyuk, and I apologize if I mispronounce those names. And a verbal up to date, we've actually had, I think, probably 3 or 4 more have requested lodging. So the EOC estimates about 10% of the passengers from Anchorage to Bethel flights are layovers needing non-congregate shelter. Right now, we just have the hotels to act as non-congregate shelter. The EOC would like to have a city facility set up with individual rooms, and an opportunity has arisen that a construction company might be willing to sell their man camp or a complex of modular buildings that, when assembled, become a camp with bedrooms, kitchens, and common area. It's a very common setup in the oil fields. If a deal is going to be put together, city management will approach council for the go-ahead to purchase the facility to be used as a non-congregate shelter. And lastly, I have Wednesday EOC Level 3 Day. Councilor Springer, you mentioned about the curve, so there's a couple graphics in my report showing the up curve. In light of the uptrend in state COVID cases, as well as the Southwest region, see embedded graphics, the EOC will be activated to full-time status, that's level 3, every Wednesdays. This means until there is an alternative hire, the temp positions that were passed in the CARES Act budget and that we have advertised on our website, to replace the permanent city employees, the city personnel will be reassigned every Wednesday as follows. There's about 7 or 8 staff that I put in the report. Essentially EOC personnel for now. When reassigned to the EOC, the employee no longer follows his or her permanent position department's chain of command, but the EOC's chain of command. Each department head will have to adjust with voids in their staffing due to personnel reassignments each Wednesday. EOC business is higher priority than regular city business. And then also on there, I attached the contractor's report. Health Fitness submitted their June 2020 monthly report. And I'd like to actually use contractor reports on the second city manager reports and report to the council the department head reports in the first week. So with that, I also have one verbal amendment that was brought to my attention 5 o'clock, so very recent, hot off the press. Fire Chief Bill Howe has submitted his resignation, and the last date of employment will be August 3rd. So we will be having to quickly scramble to find another, you know, fire chief to replace him as he retires. That's it for my city manager report, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Carrazza. I think Mr. Howell had talked about retirement several times in the past. I don't necessarily think it's a resignation. It's more of a announcement of a retirement.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the correction.
I, for one, really appreciate Mr. Howell's expertise in maintaining structure and form during the initial part of this COVID-19 and acting as city manager. And, of course, his years as a fireman and, lastly, as a fire chief. So, I'd like to see something for Mr. Howell, a nice plaque or some presentation to him. I'd like to see that. Thank you, Mr. Carrazza. Does anybody else, any questions for or comments for Mr. Carrazza?
I do, Mayor Burr. May I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am. Ms. DeWitt.
Thank you. This morning, I saw Paid Ad by Alaska Executive Search for the finance director position. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that recruiting effort and how things are going with finance, your plans to strengthen that department. I know that's been of interest to me, and I've heard other council members vocalize that same interest in the past. Thank you.
So, Mayor Barr, briefly talking to the HR director about the Alaska Executive Search, they had received about five interest from parties. They applied, and then after the screening process and having those applicants finding out where Bethel was. I think they might have mistaken Bethel for the other 37 Bethels in the United States, but after they found out where we were, they withdrew. So we don't have any interest. They all withdrew. So we're still searching for that. They've hired, but they've given us updates, and that was the last update from Alaska Executive Search. We'll keep looking for that position, and that's all I have for an update for that. Did you want more details? I can have HR Director James Harris come up and address you directly.
I don't have any more questions necessarily about that position. I was glad to see it posted. Sort of while that's being recruited for, what about that assistant finance director position that's open?
So yes, Councilor DeWitt. So just similar to how we have for the position with the lieutenant that was open, that was vacated by Lieutenant Amy Davis, I'd like to have a permanent director in place first and have them pick their assistant. It would solve a little bit of the fit, the culture. If the director doesn't get along with the lieutenant or the assistant director, things might blow up. So we want to avoid the personnel conflict that happened previously. I'd like to get a permanent director in place first, and then they could interview and screen for their assistant finance director.
Okay, and then how about, could you kind of describe like the other staffing in the department? Is it fully staffed? Are you recruiting for positions? How's it working with your contractors? I just kind of like sort of a context for how things are with the department.
Well, the overall knowledge I have, of course, Acting Finance Director John Sargent has a little bit more details, but we do have a contract with Carmen Jackson. They've came several times. She embeds herself, works for 2 weeks with staff, trains them, and then she has to leave. But then she just left here, I think, on Sunday, coming for a second round, and we're continually looking for Carmen Jackson to come. We've actually asked them for an employee who could be here, and they're saying it's really hard to find somebody who could who would come. They would prefer remote, but our impression is we really want somebody here to train staff and to also work as well. And other than that, we have staff doing a sort of cross training so that they know each other's duties, and we could shift once they know all the areas of responsibilities. They could shift to, you know, all sales tax because that's where they need it, and then next week shift to utility billing. The way they've had it in the past, it was all specialists and you were just in one spot. So now we're trying to cross train and have them, you know, cover each other. Because there's five county specialist ones, and it's all the same job description. There's nothing that says you shall be pigeonholed here. We're going to be able to use you to reinforce other needs.
And in case people are listening, I discovered personally when I came to drop off my utilities payment here that utilities payments are now up at the Public Works building. The drop off is there. And could you maybe describe how that situation's going? I think that's a change that the public should be aware of.
Yes, Councilor DeWitt, we had this going on for about a month. But the thought of the miscommunication that we have between finance, billing, and operations, we thought it was physical distance. So having them up there in one location was actually credits to Director Arnold here. He actually had the office ready well, like last year. It was a year and a half ago. The plan was there. I just basically said, hey, let's do this. It makes more sense. If somebody has a one-stop place, they can go pay the bills and they can make changes. And the operations is right in the next room. So the supervisor can make adjustments and vice versa. They could communicate back and forth. Right now, they're still short one admin assistant. He really needs an admin assistant there on the utility side. So when we get that person, they can also be working alongside the utility billing clerk all day, while the called supervisor can be around in the field, focusing on operations. So there's a need there. If we had that, that would help the hall utilities and with billing as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. DeWitt. Mr. Carranza, any other questions or comments for the city manager?
Yeah, I just have one. To kind of follow up on this assistant finance director issue is, I don't know a lot about the hiring practices and how things work and all of that. I just am taking what I'm hearing and what my first thoughts are that if we're waiting to hire an assistant finance director until we have a finance director, we're two in the hole. And, you know, I understand trying to find someone who can work well with the finance director, whom is nowhere even like around five and then nothing, like we're sitting at square one. I don't like the way it sounds that you hire the finance director and then it's like, okay, now we're going to find you someone you can work with. That I didn't think that's how hiring went. Maybe that's just me or whatever, but it sounds like we're really missing out on some leadership in the finance department by not even trying to find an assistant finance director. So I'm just voicing my thoughts on that. I don't really know where to go with that, but I don't like the way that sounds, and it just sounds like we're getting further and further away from a stabilized finance department that we passed legislation on trying to get that going even faster. So I feel like we're being counterproductive. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. All the reports by the city manager could be found online at cityofbethel.org, just as a reminder to the public. And Ms. Leary?
I just had a question about the non-congregate shelter. I think I've been in there before, and I'm just trying to remember. So it is it's private bedrooms and then shared bathrooms and shared kitchen. Is that correct? And shared, like, living room area, very small, like, living room area. Is that correct? Or can you speak to that? Sorry.
Mr. Carranza.
Sure. Councilman Leary. So, yeah, the man camp, I believe, is eight sections. There are 10 rooms, and each room is, I mean, if you really want to cram people, you can have a family up to six with the pullouts. But you can also have a family of one in one room. So we have a capability of hosting 10 folks. And yes, they have, I think it's four or five restrooms. And yes, they're individual, you know, toilets, but you would have to leave your bedroom to go to the restroom. The toilets are not in the rooms themselves.
Right.
And then there's a common area, and there's also a common kitchen as well. And we had those four shelter attendants that we had in the CARES Act budget. That would be their work site, and they would be, you know, a 24-hour shift, and they would watch for things of social distancing and requirements, and try to keep the occupants to stay in the hotel rooms or in their rooms as much as possible. Right now, that's how we have with our hotels. When we set them up with hotels, they promise that they're going to stay in their hotel rooms. They won't have visitors. The same would apply to our non-congregate shelter. It's just we would have more control, and also it would be an overflow in case we get a lot of occupants in the hotels just run out of room. Right now, we don't have any place for them. So having this under city assets will give us an additional 10 rooms that we could house, you know, 10 groups.
Yeah, I just want to make sure when we, like, if and when this goes forward, that we, my only concern with that is the shared spaces.
Right.
And we would have a shelter attendant, I guess, in theory, that could help with making sure they're, like, cleaned and sanitized often or, in between when folks from, like, different households. Basically, that's the way we usually describe it, you know, that you want to keep separate from people from different households that's my only concern. I think this is great. I think it's great to start rolling, you know, with a plan for when the hotel we've been using, and lots of people have been using, not me, that have, you know, when it becomes to capacity, that we've got some other. This is still going to be better than a congregate facility. You know, you setting up a gym is like a nightmare right now with COVID. I've I've been thinking about these folks with hurricanes rolling around them that I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what they would do if, you know. So this is way better than a congregate facility. And I just want to make sure that those kind of things are kept in mind, the shared spaces for that. Thanks. That was all I wanted to say about that.
Thank you, Ms. Fleury. So moving on, we're going on over to 11.3, which is our illustrious clerk's report.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't really have a whole lot for the public. We are preparing for our October election. The Declaration of Candidacy packets will be available on the city's website July 30th. So be sure to check that out, the opening period. If you're interested in sitting on council, the Declaration of Candidacy packets can be submitted between August 5th and August 20th. In addition to that, we have our election calendar and election information updated on the city's website to include options for vote by mail if you're interested. We also have the electronic voting ballot delivery option if you're interested in that. And we're beginning to work on our early voting schedule to allow for extended hours for early voting in advance of Election Day. We've also been coordinating with our precinct locations to make sure that we have adequate space, and we'll be moving one of the locations at LKSC into a larger area to accommodate separate ingress and egress for the voters and to allow a little bit more space for our precinct officials. We've also ordered a list of supplies to make sure that those deciding to vote in person on Election Day can do so as safely as possible. So again, our election calendar and voting information is available on our website. We've also uploaded our audio notices of election and declaration of candidacy, voter registration information in YouTube. So if you know an elder out there that wants to get updated on our election information, please take them to the website and allow them to listen to the audio information that's there. That is all that I have for the public. Unless council has questions.
Yes, Mr.
Mayor. Mr. Springer.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. There was an interview on Coffee with KWK where I didn't even recognize his voice. I finally realized it was Anna Hoffman who was interviewing him, but our double secret lieutenant governor was talking particularly about the need for election workers here in Bethel. I understand. I think a lot of us got mail. I haven't opened mine yet, but I think there's a letter from the elections office in Nome pointing out that there will not be an absentee ballot location in Bethel for the primary. But he also said that there's only enough staff right now for one precinct location, and as you said, we have two. Mm-hmm. He said they're $15 an hour jobs, at least for the day, and then probably for the training. So could you talk about that for just a second?
Well, outside of your very detailed summary, I don't have a whole lot to add. I know that I have been doing my best to assist the state in trying to identify support in their elections operation. It's going to be difficult for all of us to find election officials that are going to be comfortable and willing to work in this kind of environment. So I would encourage anyone who is hoping to, or is able to provide some election support to the state to go ahead and reach out to the State of Alaska Division of Elections, because they do have a number of election official positions available for both the primary and the general election.
Thank you, Ms. Strickler. Thank you, Mr. Springer. Anything else for our clerk? Ms. Franco, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I was muted.
No problem. Just wanted to make sure you're still with us. Hearing nothing else for the city clerk, we're going to move on to item number 12, which is the council member comments. I'm going to go first. The city of Bethel is working with AML and the Attorney General's office to try and find a way to maybe give us a little more oomph for mandating masks within this community. I really think it's the responsibility of not only this council, but of this community to make sure that we are protecting our own and ourselves. So I just want the public to know that we're trying to do a little bit more than just saying we strongly recommend that you wear masks. We really want to say we want you to wear masks and be aware of your social distancing and making sure that you're always washing, not taking a bath, but washing on a regular basis. The teachers are coming into this community. A lot of them are being housed over at the Longhouse as they're traveling to villages. As everybody knows, LKSD has their school schedule is starting. So there's a lot of transients that are coming into this community, and we still have a high percentage of people that are testing over at Alaska Airlines, but we still don't have 100% compliance, which I'm sure not only bothers the council, but it also bothers a lot of other people. So we really need to strive for 100% compliance. I think we have done great as a community to flatten the curve, as everybody is talking and using that phrase. And one thing that I'd like for Ms. DeWitt to talk a little bit about when she does her report is another reminder about the BCFF $1 million grant that the city gave, and maybe remind the public as to what it's for and what everybody can apply for. I'd really appreciate that, Ms. DeWitt. And one of the things that I know that we had discussed, the last thing for me that I know that we had discussed, is getting our volunteers paid that are making masks. You know, if we can maybe come up with a way to pay those volunteers that work. I know they work over at the BSAR building on weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And if we can find a way to pay them for making masks during for using CARES money, I think that would be a really good thing. I don't know if it has to be a directive from this council or a resolution or an action memorandum, but I think that would be a really good thing for this council to bring forth. That's it for me. Have a great, safe blueberry picking season. Let's move on over to just going down the list. Vice Mayor Hansen.
No comments tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Council Member Leary.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I already spoke enough about everything else tonight, but I did want to say I failed to highlight the recommendation to council, the recommendation to City Council that the Public Works Committee passed unanimously at our last meeting. And just, it's pretty brief, so I'm just going to read it real quick. The issue is that the City of Bethel is $612,000 behind on retrieving revenue for water and sewer services. Citizens of Bethel are experiencing hardship. CARES Act funds are not permitted to be utilized as supplement of lost revenue. Let me say that last sentence again. CARES Act funds are not permitted to be utilized as a supplement to lost revenue. We cannot use CARES Act funds to pay people's water and sewer bills because that is something that the city usually is a revenue for us. I think the public in general does not understand that. And I get it why you would think, and I almost want to say that they weren't thinking right when they made up all the restrictions on CARES Act, because that just seems obviously a way that would help help with the general public health of the community. But either way, that is the way it stands right now. I see at least once a week, or hear once a week, maybe once a day, that's something that the public would like to see the city spend money on, and we, as far as we all know, we can't, and we're trying to be really careful about making sure we don't spend this money incorrectly to where we would have to like give it back, right? So we really want to make sure we're spending this money correctly. So I just wanted to highlight that. And so the recommendation as it stands on the, and this is on page 23 in our packet, if and when the extension of the emergency ordinance becomes a topic of discussion, consider amending the language regarding waiving the late penalties and shutting off utility services. And the committee would like, the council to explore an option of creating a utility application that includes monthly proof of hardship in order to allow citizens experiencing difficulties due to COVID-19 to avoid the penalties and shutoffs. We recognize that $612,000 behind is a lot, and there may be folks that are taking advantage of this, but we really want to, make sure that if someone really wants to, avoid penalties and shutoffs, then we're hoping that there could be an application or something developed where the onus is on them to prove every month that they are experiencing that hardship, and so we will not shut them off. But folks need to realize that that's not it's not an application for free services. It's just to forego your services being shut off, and you will eventually have to pay that bill. So it's not the greatest solution there is, but that's what I believe we can do legally right now. So I just wanted to highlight that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fleury. And moving on to Ms. Franco. Cece, you're up.
Thank you, Mayor Barr. I don't really have any comments tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Cece. And Council Member Springer.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Let me gather my scattered thoughts here. ONC is going to be having another listening session. The council is tomorrow morning, like the one we had a couple of weeks ago, to hear from tribal members on how they're being impacted by the pandemic and what suggestions they have to the council for utilizing the CARES Act funding that ONC has received. To the city staff, just a reminder that one of the principal tenets of our UPIC values here in the Lycay Delta is love of and respect for our elders. And as one individual council member, I certainly expect the city to reflect that. I'm glad to see that there's going to be a voluntary reduction in off sale by the local licensee, and I'm certainly looking forward to the ABC board meeting on August 18th when our resolution is presented. Good news for Rebecca Trimble. Congressman Young has introduced a private bill on her behalf, joining one introduced by Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan. So all I can say is please spare at least one kind thought for the President of the United States so that he will sign that bill when it passes. And then you can get back to normal. On testing, if you're an employer who brings people in from Anchorage, whether you're a contractor, whether you're having somebody come appraise your house, whatever, you're paying them to come out here. You have every right to tell them, either show me a negative test very recent from Anchorage or bring me a receipt from out of the airport. Too many people are getting off the plane. They're saying, oh man, I got to get on the job. I got to get to work. I don't have time to get tested. There's a story on KTUU tonight that says, an epidemiologist, Dr. Hennessy at UAA, projected in the early June that Anchorage had 60 to 20 weeks before its hospitals would be overwhelmed. Right now, they are saying that if there's no check in the increase in COVID-19 cases in Alaska, hospitals in Anchorage, and presumably around the state, will be overwhelmed in 8 weeks. So if you look at the calendar, 8 weeks from now is, October. We don't want that to happen here or anywhere else in winter. So we have to, other parts of the state that need to take Bethel's lead, and flatten the doggone curve. beyond that, get ready for winter, get those sewer lines, those drain pipes insulated and button up into the house and start getting your firewood and pick a lot of berries. And somebody said they are berry picking and there's wolves up river a ways. So, you know, watch out. Okay, thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. Ms. DeWitt.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Barr. To tag on to what Mark said about COVID-19 and the risk, the threat it poses to all of us, I just want to encourage, while the city ponders what powers it may or may not be able to exercise, for the greater community, as employers and businesses, I would really encourage every business and organization to examine policies that would require mask wearing in their organizations or facilities. Could have a huge, tremendously positive impact for Bethel and by extension the whole region. So, so that is something I wanted to encourage folks to do. And Mayor, you asked me to speak about the CARES Act funding. I have to be a bit careful about that because I have a conflict as a council member. And just to remind the public that conflict is, I work for Bethel Community Services Foundation, which is assisting the city in implementation of the business grants program and has accepted funds, which will be used for awarding a nonprofit grant making program. And with that comes a fee. It doesn't affect my salary or my payroll, but the organization does get compensated for doing that work. And so I guess I will defer to the city attorney for how the attorney would advise me to handle that request.
Oh, I just think, as I understood the mayor, sorry, this is Libby Bacalar, council member DeWitt. As I understood the mayor's request, it was just to explain the grant program. Maybe the mayor can elaborate on that. I'm happy to just sub in and talk about that a little bit, because I did help work on some of those materials. Basically, it's just so the public understands, the city gave $1 million to BCSF of CARES money to distribute to businesses and nonprofits. And it's a fairly quick turnaround for the application period. And all of the materials for businesses and nonprofits to apply for those grants is on the BCSF website. I think it's, thank you, Councilmember DeWitt, for identifying that conflict. I think it's appropriate for somebody else to answer and discuss that stuff. But that's the gist. I don't know if that properly answered the mayor's question, but that's the situation with the grant making from the CARES funds. BCSF is helping administer those funds.
At a previous meeting, I had ruled that there was not a conflict of interest for council members to it. Participation in BCSF. I'll put that out there.
That was a slightly different one. There were two different instances of ruling on those conflicts. One of them was earlier about a purchase of some property or some rental of some property. I think in this particular instance, you did determine there was a conflict.
Thank you for that reminder, Ms. Bacalar. I guess I just wanted Ms. DeWitt, in her capacity as a employee of BCSF, just to say, hey, come to our website. It'll tell you in detail as to how to apply for these grants and what the requirements are and et cetera.
Mr. Mayor, I think, our city manager has those materials and could probably speak to that, as could our clerk or city attorney. I just have to be very careful about that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for your input. Would you like to add anything to your other conversation? No? Thank you, Ms. DeWitt. And last but not least, Council Member Diamond. Before he goes, I know there's going to be a motion to adjourn right after he gets done.
I'll make the motion too, so I'll be fast.
Yeah, so but I just wanted to say thank you to the council. Thank you for the amount of work that you guys put in for the city businesses and all the commissions and committees that you guys I listen to you guys, and you guys are very informed and very educated about what we're proposing and what we're talking about and what we're commenting on. So thank you for that. With that said, Mr. Diamond.
Yeah, the follow-up on that, I was going to make the same point. I'm really impressed with this council, with the other council members, with your involvement in this, in the commission. You're well informed, and it's really important. I hope the public knows this: is that when the committee or commission meets, and they submit recommendations to the city council, it seems to me we're always following them up and looking at them, and we're getting really intelligent stuff from the committees that we should be thinking about and following up on. So I just want to thank the city council members for their work on the commissions and those commissions. And the members of the public that are on them. So when you're on a city committee or commission, you're doing real work, which isn't just talk. It becomes effective, like something actually happens. The city council looks at it, and that's important. So thanks to the city council member and the members of the public. And I'm just glad we were able to come to terms, at least for now, with the local licensee. And so I'm good to go.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. Our next item on the agenda.
Motion to adjourn.
Is executive session. We have nothing for executive session, so there's a motion on the floor by Mr. Diamond to adjourn, and seconded by Mr. Springer. All those in favor of adjournment indicate by saying aye.
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 We are adjourned at 10:14.
Thanks, CC.
Koyana for listening to KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. That concludes our live coverage of Bethel City Council. Take care. Have a good evening.
Though he made no confession, they carried him to jail. No friends nor relation would go on.
You know, when Merle picked up that little nylon string guitar there that he's just now took up in his hands last summer, I wondered what kind of things he'd come up with. And notions, you know, you have to let a feller figure out what he's going to do with something once he gets a hold of it. And I believe you'll enjoy what he decided to do. We're going to do Frankie and Johnny, and he's going to pick it John Hurt style. Your little head down in your hand.